Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast. This is Jamie Russo. Today's episode is brought to you by Community Manager University, which is a training and development platform for community managers from day one to regional manager. The platform includes mini courses that cover the major buckets of the community manager role, including operations, community management, sales and marketing, finance, and leadership. And the content is laid out in a graduated learning path so that your community manager can identify what content is relevant to them given their experience. They'll also get monthly resources, templates. We do Q&A calls each month and have a very active Slack group. So in addition to learning from training modules, they get just-in-time support from a fantastic group of community managers from around the world. If you would like more information, go to www.everythingcoworking.com/community managers. Today is a really fun episode. I have a unique guest for you. Stu from Stu's Self Serve Garage shares his story and talks about his business model and his lessons learned. And I invited Stu on because while he's not directly in the co-working industry, he's definitely part of the shared economy, and the folks that use his space, at least a segment of them, benefit from the community aspect of the business. And I also just think it's really interesting to learn lessons from other people's business. So Stu had some great things to share about his biggest learnings and his biggest challenges and some of the things that he's overcome along the way and his plans for expanding his business that I think absolutely apply to co-working. And Stu is a GWA member, so I love that too. So thanks, Stu, for a great episode. I hope you guys enjoy our conversation. Today, I have a very unique guest on the show. He joined the GWA, I can't remember when you joined, but an email immediately floated around about how unique and interesting of a new member we had. So I made a note to self right then that I wanted to have Stu on the podcast. Stu is the owner of Stu's Self Serve Garage. Thank you for joining me today, Stu.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Okay, so I have so many questions for you. We were just chatting and I said, Stu, it's time to hit record so that everybody can hear our conversation. So let's start at the beginning. Tell us about you, your background, and how you got to start Stu's Self-Serve Garage.
So part of getting to this point is I'm a big car guy. From my earliest memories, I was just infatuated with cars. Like in preschool, when you're playing with blocks, I built cars.
Okay.
All the way, you know, I drew cars on everything. So cars was everything to me. And so it was just kind of this natural progression that once I could drive, I wanted to work on the cars. And I was kind of also aided by the fact that my dad bought me a $500 car and said, if you want to drive, you got to keep it on the road. I'm not paying for a mechanic.
I think my first car was $800.
So I learned how to work on my car, and I've just always been kind of self-driven, self-starter. I kind of live with this, I call it the grip it and rip it mentality, and that I'm not afraid to take on the challenge. So just by working on cars all the time, I needed a place to work on my cars. Once I went to college, there obviously isn't a garage.
Oh, right. Your apartment doesn't have a garage that you can like put parts in and elevate your car and all the things you need to do.
Yeah, absolutely. So where I was going is in Ellensburg, Washington, which is December is cold, snowy, windy. It's probably like 25 degrees outside, ice. And at the time I had a Toyota truck that I had to do the whole suspension on. And I really didn't want to do it in the dorm parking lot. Like I really did not want to have to do that in the dorm parking lot. And so I was calling around to local shops like, hey, you know, could I ideally rent a lift from you? If not, just like some space so I'm inside. And everybody said, no, there's no way that's happening. And so I was sitting in my dorm room with my buddies going, man, I really wish there was this place that I could go to and they'd have the lift and the tools and it would be
heat.
Heated.
Yeah.
there'd be a guy there. So if I had questions, I could ask them. And I went, you know what? That's actually a really good idea. I should roll with this. So that's kind of where I ended up going. At the time, I was going to college and with intentions on being a surgeon. So
you were going to be a surgeon.
That was kind of my goal. Yeah.
I can work on cars. I can work on people.
Well, you know, cars you can bring back from the dead. So. Humans, it's a little bit trickier. And so, yeah, I wanted to be a surgeon. Kind of one of my big things is helping people. And so this is kind of a different way of helping people. We help people save money instead of helping them.
Well, and pursue their passion. Like, I assume you enjoy working on your car.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, for me, working on my car sometimes can be therapeutic. Sometimes it can be frustrating. But, yeah, and so I kind of had a major shift in career focus and moved more into being business and starting the business and running the business. And obviously it's a passion of mine, so that helps a lot. So there's always that interest level.
Yeah. So did you finish school?
No, I dropped out.
No more being a surgeon. I'm pursuing this idea.
I didn't even make it through a whole year. I dropped out after 3 quarters. And like my second quarter, I was there only a couple days a week because I wrote the business plan in December. So I went to school in September. And by December, I was like, this is what I want to do. I started writing the business plan, did all the financial projections. And then when I came back to school for winter quarter after the holidays and everything, I basically created my schedule. So I only had to be there Tuesday and Thursday. And every other, like, I would just go back home and work on my business. And so I was barely present for the second quarter of college. So I didn't make it very far. I dropped out very quickly. So for a good reason.
Okay, so then how did you get the business off the ground and how did you find a all the things?
Yeah, very hard. So I was 19 at the time, which most people don't want to take a 19-year-old seriously. So that's definitely
like a bank, for instance.
Yeah, bank is going to
a landlord.
especially not landlords, because now they're really taking a risk on you. Because that's the thing, is, you know, a commercial lease for multiple years is worth hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars. So they're taking a chance on you.
Yep.
And most people don't really think of it that way, because if a space sits unoccupied, that landlord's not making money and they don't want it to sit unoccupied. So yeah, when I dropped out of school, I hired a real estate broker to start helping me look for a location. And I kind of got bait and switched, actually. That was kind of my first lesson, is they may act like they're your friend, but they are not. Many people will offer like they are going to help you, but if you do not fully understand that you have to be self-interested and everybody else is self-interested, you're kind of in for a world of pain. And so we had found a space with this broker and I was thinking, wow, what a great deal. In our area, real estate is pretty expensive. And so
you are how far outside of Seattle?
We're about depending on the time, 20-minute drive.
Oh, okay. So pretty close. Yeah.
In Seattle, we're separated by Lake Washington. So there's Seattle on one side and the east side on the east side. And it's separated by Lake Washington. And so I'm in Kirkland, which is part of the east side, where we are in some of the most expensive real estate in the country.
Okay.
So at that point in time, a good deal on warehouse space was under $1 a square foot. And then office was about $1 a square foot. That was considered like a good deal. Like, you're getting a really good deal. And this broker was like, yeah, I think we can get this space for probably like 65 cents a square foot warehouse and maybe 90 cents a square foot office. And I was going, wow, you know, that sounds like a pretty good deal, because the space has been sitting empty for a while. And so I was like, yeah, let's do it. Write up the letter of intent, which is what is kind of like the first step in getting a lease, is it's a lot of the basic terms and that are going to go into the lease just on an offer sheet. And then you send it to the landlord and you negotiate off of that before you get into the full legal contract. So I was like, yeah, put that in a letter of intent. Let's send it off. This will be great. He sends me the copy of the letter of intent that he sent to the landlord, and it's $1.20 a square foot office and 90 cents a square foot warehouse. And I'm sitting there going, that's not what you told me, on top of, you know, numerous other errors in the letter of intent. And he goes, I never would have said that, and blah, 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 blah. And kind of was a he said, she said kind of deal. And I was just some starry-eyed dreaming kid that totally didn't understand how any of this works. And so I knew right then and there I needed a new broker. And so at that point in time, I was thinking, okay, well, I'm going to need a real estate attorney anyway. I'm going to go find an attorney first, and then I will let them make a recommendation to a broker, because it's coming from an attorney who probably is going to be golfing buddies with that broker's boss. And so they're probably going to treat me a little bit better. And so that's what I did. And I got a good broker who I still have a relationship with. We signed a lease extension just last year for another 5 years in our current spot. And he helped with that. So
did you have to start your space search over at that point?
Yeah. Or? Once you send a letter of intent to the landlord that says, I'm going to pay at this rate, and you don't want it.
You're not going. Yeah.
It doesn't go down. It only goes
yeah.
down.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we had to find another space, which turned out was only a couple blocks away from where we originally looked. But I've got a little bit of an interest in story on that. The space that we ended up with is actually not the first space I signed a lease on.
Oh.
First space I signed a lease on, we did all of our due diligence. We checked the zoning, we checked the permitting, we checked that we could do these things. Yep, no problem. We were leasing two suites side by side, and then we would cut a hole through the wall to allow pass through. Turned out that that wall was a major firewall.
Oh boy.
It was just not on the building blueprints that were
filed
in the city.
Oh no.
It was kind of one of those, oh, you cut a hole in this? Yeah, you can do that. And then it was, well, we leased this space, and in the contract, it specifically stated, you know, this is what we were going to use it for. It was stipulated that that would be part of the deal. So we were protected in the instance that if we couldn't, we could get out of the deal. So
wow.
We ended up getting out of that lease, and no fault of our own. It was kind of on the landlord, who knew probably that he couldn't do this, and because he was upset that inspectors came out. I didn't realize he was doing any of this unpermitted.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So when you file for your business license, which obviously I did, the city sends inspectors out to make sure that the space exists and so on and so forth. And when the inspectors showed up, they went, that wall is pretty thick. That looks like a firewall. Sure enough, it was. And that started this whole chain reaction of, oh, we're finding another space all over again.
That was a good day for you.
Yeah, I chalked that up as to probably one of the worst days ever.
Yeah, I can imagine. Oh,
that's a lot of time and money just out the
window. Yeah.
So now the space that we are in currently, and will be at least for the next 5 years, and have been here for 5 years already, we are rock solid on.
Awesome.
Did not have any of those same issues. So it was kind of nice, because the owner at the time, our building's been sold a couple times since then, but the owner at the time selected our business, even though there were other offers on the table, because he felt like this was something that the area needed. And he kind of saw a little bit of maybe a young him at the time, because when we signed the lease, I was 20 by that point. And so I was still young and just kind of trying to grip it and rip it, just get after it and make something happen, you know? So it was tough, because even still, our economy never really crashed when the recession happened. I mean, yeah, you know, it was still a little bit tougher, but we're so insulated by Microsoft and Amazon and Boeing and all these other major companies. So for us, you know, there wasn't really much of a recession. Sure, some wage stagnation, but there wasn't this huge real estate availability. So it was still very competitive. And which is reflected in the prices. And the prices have gone up substantially.
Like, yeah.
You know, our lease price went up over 30%. And that's just how it goes.
So tell me a little bit more. First, I have to mention, because we talked about this in our pre-chat, there are not many other stews out there. So your business model is a little bit unique. You mentioned, you know, there are some, but some are kind of started as hobbies, and just not a lot of other folks that are making this business model work. So you're kind of, you're a little bit on an island.
Yeah, there are a few. There are some that have been around for longer than I have, some that haven't been around as long, and most of them usually don't last much past a year. They do get started as hobbies, kind of people going, the same mindset that I was in. I wanted a place where I could work on my car myself, and then also rent it out to try to help pay for it.
Yep. But
I differentiate that in that I run it as a business. In fact, I barely work on my car at all anymore.
Yeah.
Because I don't have the time or the availability. No. So, but a lot of other people, they look at it as a way for them to get something that they want, and they run it as a hobby, and so it doesn't last. And then there are others that have been around for a long time, and then they run it as a business. It's just, I don't know, they kind of take it to the same token as I do.
So tell me about the people that use your space. So there's kind of your use case. Who else? What are the other types of people that will use your service? Describe what the service is first. I, of course, went through your website, and so I feel like I've got a handle on it. But for everybody listening who doesn't know, kind of, yeah, talk about your offering and then who uses it.
So my business is a self-service auto garage. So we provide lift tools and equipment and experts on staff who can answer questions for you to come in and work on your own car. So you can come in and do mechanical jobs, fix your car yourself, generally save quite a bit of money, and get back down the road with a safe car and some good savings in your pocket. We are available to the public. You don't have to have a membership. You don't have to be extraordinarily knowledgeable. You don't have to be a mechanic. We get all kinds of people, everybody from I've never picked up a wrench in my life to...
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I'll have to tell that story.
Okay.
But yeah, I've got one in particular that I love to tell. But everybody from never picked up a wrench before to very seasoned mechanics, been building cars their whole life, et cetera. You know, it can be done on a car. They've done it. And everybody in between, you know, even just the general person who they get a quote for $2,000 for something on their car. And they go, well, I don't have $2,000 for that, but I have to have my car. How can I do this cheaper? And so they hit the internet and they go looking for something like us, and we pop up, and we're here to help people do that.
But you don't provide any services.
No,
like you're not going to do it for them. It's all self-serve. Okay.
All 100% self-service. So we cannot turn the wrench for you. So that's, we're here to answer questions and provide guidance. We just can't turn the wrench for you.
Okay.
And so, you know, we can, as long as we're not very busy, you know, when we're slam-packed busy, it's a shared resource. You are sharing that expert with everybody else in the shop as well. So when we're less busy, we can even sit down and say, okay, you're doing brakes. You're going to start here, take the wheel off, and just kind of give step-by-step instructions. And we'll generally walk you through the first one, and then you generally can do the second one yourself.
Okay. Tell us about the guy that had never picked up a wrench before.
So he is one of my favorite customers. He's just he's a super nice guy. He's a software engineer. He, you know, he was familiar with what tools are, of course, but he hadn't really ever worked on anything. He's a software guy, and he decided he really wanted to learn. And so he went and bought a older BMW that was mechanically not terrible, but needed some work. And he decided he wanted to learn. He wanted to do it himself. He wanted to learn. And so he came in and he started off with like an oil change. And, you know, we had to show him what all the tools were and how they work and how to use them and how to use them correctly. And it just evolved. You know, it started with an oil change, and then he needed to do brakes, and then he wanted to do some suspension stuff. And then he wanted to replace the head on the motor. He wanted to replace the motor. He wanted to do all of these mechanical things, in which he did. I say this is probably the best mechanical mid-80s BMW you'll ever see in your life that isn't brand new off the showroom floor. I mean, he literally did every mechanical job on his car. And I don't see him very much anymore because he's got a perfectly mechanical running car, right? So, but he started out with literally like no knowledge, period. And just through that self-determination to learn, and then obviously with some help from us in terms of instruction, he went for it, and he just took that leap and had faith in us that we weren't going to leave him high and dry, and we would help him through all of the problems he might encounter and teach him a lot of things. And we sure did. And he still comes in. Like I said, I don't see him very often because he doesn't
do
much because his car is like perfect, but we still see him. He still has the car running great. And it was definitely I say that's probably my success story. Somebody was able to start into the hobby with literally nothing and get to the point where they are with the help that we provided and the resource that we provided. And to me, you know, being in business for 5 years is certainly a success. You know, that's a great metric, but how much impact have you had?
Yeah.
I measure by how much impact we have. If we can help people learn, save money, that's more success to me than just, you know, having a great sales month or just lasting for oh so long. So it's definitely very important for me to have success with the customers. That's my metric for success.
So who is, so you talked a little bit in our pre-chat about fleet companies sort of doing maintenance and whatnot on their cars. What are some of the other range of people that use your space?
So, you know, there's fleet maintenance. So, you know, your exterminators or whatever, the businesses that have a fleet of cars, they come in. We get what are called mobile mechanics, the guys who you can hire to come to you and work on your car. A lot of them, what they do is they go to you, pick up your car, and then they bring it here.
To you. Yep. Okay.
because they want a shop environment to be able to do that. Of course, they still do work on cars at remote locations too, but we also see, you know, just the regular person who's got a car and they need to do brakes or they need to fix their struts or they need to do some job. Then they're just, they own the car to get from A to B. You know, they're not enthusiasts. They're not at all, you know, into cars. They just need to keep it on the road. And then we have a good sector of people who are enthusiasts, who they're doing modifications, they're performance upgrades, they're tinkering, they're having fun. I mean, we've got a customer who is a top-end executive who, you know, he makes tons of money a year, has all these exotic cars, and he comes in and tinkers with them because he likes it. It's something that's fun for him. And people are like, I can't believe someone, you know, so would work on their car because they have millions of dollars. I'm like, well, at the same time, if they mess it up, they can afford to have something.
Right. Totally. So tell me about the experts that you have on hand. Like, what do they, so it sounds like they can do a lot if there's time.
So yeah, depending on how much time is, you know, how much assistance we can really give you. All of our experts who work here have over 10 years of experience working with or on cars. So myself, I've been working on cars for 11, 12 years. We have a couple older gentlemen who've been working on cars for over 45 years. So, and, you know, we are experts. It's our day job. We understand how all of the systems in your cars work, and we understand the components and we understand how to fix them properly and ways to overcome challenges that might arise. So we understand all of the common pitfalls that you might experience in a job. So probably one of the most common things is people come in and do brakes. Well, a brake rotor can actually get stuck on your car. And that might be a little intimidating. You're sitting there going, great, you know, well, my car's apart and this part's stuck on the car. How do I get it off? Well, funny enough, just grab a big metal hammer and hit it. You know.
Okay. So for some reason, I'm picturing all these people in your space, like on YouTube.
Yeah. I mean, YouTube universe.
There's some of that. Yeah. Better to use the experts, but.
Yeah. We love YouTube in terms of it's good information for people to just see. Like the YouTube video does not include everything. You know, there are problems that you may have that didn't happen to the person filming that video, so it doesn't get covered. And so that's where we fill in a lot of those knowledge gaps.
Yeah.
We know every single problem that can happen when you are doing this job, and we know how to fix all of those things. And so, you know, your video is great for showing you the job and showing you the general things that you're going to have to interact with. It might just not show you, oh, if you get stuck here, this is how you get out of that. And so we fill in a lot of that. I mean, I like YouTube, but it's just the customer I don't like is the one who watches a YouTube video, runs into a problem that isn't on the video, comes and asks us for help, and then says, no, you're wrong, and continues to look on YouTube for the solution.
Oh, no. Right.
And we do get those people. You know, we are there to offer the help. It's included in the price. It doesn't cost anything extra, but the price isn't any less if you don't use our help.
Right. Right. Totally. So you might as well, since we know what we're doing. Yeah. How do people find you? How do you market?
We get a lot of people through word of mouth and Google searching. You know, SEO is important. We also do social media advertising.
We mainly
on Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah.
We also are present at some car events. So
maintain
that relation with the car community as a whole. But a lot of our customers come in through word of mouth. We have, I last count, we had something like 400 five-star reviews spread across Google, Facebook, and Yelp. So,
wait, can I read one of the testimonials from your website?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Jim W. says, there is nothing bad to say here. For the do-it-yourselfer, this place is like an oasis in the middle of the desert. Full tool suite for each bay, specialty tools behind the desk, and very nice lifts. Clean, organized, not pretentious. I'd freaking live here if it wasn't weird, but that would be.
Well, you know, it's funny. He's been quite a lot.
That's the best testimonial ever.
Jim sometimes acts like he lives here.
Well, so I have a question about that. So, you know, we come from the co-working world where community is primary for us. What does that look like in your business?
So,
besides Jim, who wants to live there?
We're a little different in terms of people aren't here like by the month or
right. So right. They're not coming every day. Term. Yeah.
However, so for like the A to B car owner, you know, they're not a car enthusiast.
Yeah, it's more transactional.
They're transactional. A lot of our community comes from guys who are going out to the racetrack or they own a car and they're in a car club. And so they interact with somebody else who has the same car who's an enthusiast and say, hey, maybe you should join our car club or whatever. And so we do have a community of guys who go to the track all the time and have probably grown closer together from coming in and working on their cars here because they come and support each other. You know, somebody goes to the track and they blow up their engine. Hey, I got to pull my engine. Can you guys come help me? And so, you know, that Monday they're in replacing the engine on their car or, you know, other things too. And so the community is a little different in terms of there is a lot that's just transactional because we're very short term. Most people aren't here for more than a few hours. So they don't have that opportunity to get to know the person next to them. And it's more so we just kind of help build on an existing community. So the existing car community is improved when these people come here together or extend their network by meeting somebody here who's an enthusiast who might be interested in joining a club or hanging out with that person. So it's a little different in that sense.
Yeah, but I still can see how it plays out. I think it's really neat. I mean, it's neat to have a place right outside of the track or the car club or whatever where people can come together and pursue a hobby and something that they're passionate about.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's like a community center for them specifically.
So I have a couple of business questions. What's been, besides the lease that you couldn't actually occupy, what are a couple of your biggest challenges so far? I mean, you're 5 years in, you're like a total pro at this point, but
yeah, you know, it's
back to the early days.
Nailing down the product is certainly a big challenge. You know, there's the three P's in business, people, product, and process. And nailing down your product can be kind of challenging. When you start, you have this idea in your head of what you want it to be. And then the customers show up and maybe they didn't like that, or maybe that just doesn't work. It's a cool thought. It's just not able to be acted upon. And so some of the early challenges were just, you know, making sure that our product worked for the customers. And I mean, obviously, I had a pretty good start. We hadn't had a whole lot of friction on that sense. It was just kind of improving upon the existing offering to just build additional value. So when we opened, we still provided tools in every bay, and we had a tool room for all the other specialty tools that don't need to be in every bay. But adding on to that, it's a lot of capital to continue to add tools on top of market penetration. Nobody knows what the hell a self-service garage is. You know, they don't even know.
That's why I was curious about the marketing aspect. Like, do they even know it's possible? So would they even look for it?
You know, you gotta make that awareness. And so market penetration. So there are all of these people out there who will come to your business, but if they don't know the thing exists, they aren't showing up.
Yeah.
So that was easily like the biggest challenge for us, is getting the people to show up and use the product. Once we get you through the door, you're hooked. Like, okay. Gotcha.
Okay.
Lift addiction.
Lift addiction. That's great. Good for you.
So, yeah, our goal is just to get you to come in and interact with the service. And so it's that market penetration. It was probably like the biggest challenge by far, but still like nailing down exactly what the service product had to be to make sure that these people want to come back was important.
What are a couple of things, the biggest learnings that you've had in your business?
So kind of to touch on how, you know, you need to make your product work for your customer, it's how much success somebody can have in business by just listening to the customer. You know, you don't have to do everything that they say, obviously, yeah. but just taking what your customer has to say and some of the feedback and going, how can I change or adjust or implement my product or service so it works better for them in a way that still works for you? You know, that's the thing, is saying no is probably one of the hardest things in business.
Totally.
You have to be willing to say no. We have requests from our customers where we just have to say no. It's just not going to happen. But
it's harder, especially in the early days when you're desperate for customers. You're like, you want that? I'll do that.
Yeah, and then, right? Yeah. Well, that's the thing, is you can't stray too far away from your core product. That's another thing. One thing that we were talking about earlier was we did these safety inspections for ride shares, and you get in a ride share car, that ride share car has to have a safety inspection, at least in Seattle and the greater Seattle area. And so we did those ride share inspections for a specific company. And when we did them, we were the fastest shop in the world to do them. And we got paid very, very well to do that. And that was keeping our doors open. However, it's like the circus comes to town when you deal with that. You know, you have 50, 60, 70, 80 people showing up all at one time to get you to do this inspection on their vehicle, and they want it done right now. They don't want to wait. And all the while, you're still trying to maintain this other business that's a self-service garage. And so you start straying away from your core product. And so
that's so tempting because of the revenue, but that's not really what you meant to do, but it's lucrative.
It's very lucrative. You know, we were able, in a sense, we stopped at the right time. We were able to extend our cash runway by good amount and give us that additional time. So once we pretty much mutually separated, it was okay. And we were able to much better get back to our core product, because what was actually a signal was we had somebody call, they had come through the parking lot, assumed that we were way too busy and left. And they called an appointment and they're like, yeah, when can I come in when you're not slam packed? And it's like, well, we had room for that self-service customer, but they didn't realize it because they saw everything else. And so that's definitely a big learning thing. And we started getting complaints from our customers saying, you know, this is a real pain in the ass to come to you when that rideshare company is here. When are they not there?
Yeah.
And so that was like a big alarm bell
flag. Yep. So what's next for Stu's self-service garage?
So kind of the next step and what we're working on throughout the year is getting ready for expansion. We want to bring a Stu self-service garage to a city near you. So now, that being said, you have to do it right. The important thing for me is making sure that we have the perfect product and people and process in place in this existing location. So when we do get ready to expand, we can do that and it's smooth and the product is consistent across the board. And you could go to anyone in any city and have that exact same experience, because I want it to be that oasis in the middle of the desert as gems.
You just don't want people to live there.
Yeah, they'll live there.
Who knows? Maybe someday. Live, work.
Yeah, I can't talk too much about some of the things that I have in my head.
Okay. You
know, we've got some kind of creative ideas.
Okay.
And that's the thing, is we just want to make sure that when one opens up nearby to you, wherever you are, you can consistently experience what I want you to experience, which is I want you to come in, feel comfortable, no matter who you are. I mean, women specifically, when they come in.
I was just thinking, I was like, what could I fix there? So I grew up on a farm in upstate New York, and my dad was like the ultimate, you want a swing set? I'll build you a swing set. Yep. You need new tires? I'll change your tires. Like, well, and of course, all the tractors and like farm equipment he had to fix. I was thinking, like, I can't even imagine what he would do if he saw a place like yours. He would think he'd died and gone to heaven.
Well, that's exactly,
he would want to live there. Yeah.
Exactly what we shoot for, is we want you to feel very comfortable being here. And like I said, regardless of who you are, and no pretentious attitude from us, and you can have that consistent experience wherever you go. It's like if you go into a Jimmy John's franchise, you're getting the exact same sandwich made the exact same way with the exact same level of customer service. It's just perfect every single time. That's exactly how we want it to be. You can walk into our location anywhere in the world you are, and it's like you walked into this exact one. So this year is the year of process for me. It's nailing down all of the ways that make our shop what it is and how it works, so we can then copy paste that. So when we do open one up, another and another and another, you're getting that same experience.
Is the process piece hard? Some entrepreneurs like, oh, this is painful. I have ideas I would like to pursue. No, like process.
Yeah. So process is probably the hardest one. It's not, I shouldn't say it's the hardest. I think actually nailing down the product and the people is probably harder than the process. The process is hard and it's very monotonous. It's very like
it's detailed and
detail oriented. Yeah. You're really working through a lot of fine things. Like you just know to do this thing because that's how you've done it this entire time. Now you got to write it down and you got to create a policy around it. And you have to like exactly state, it's like in fifth grade, I specifically remember this lesson. In fifth grade, we had to write how to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Seems pretty simple, right?
Yeah.
Everybody knows how to do that. Okay, yeah, well, you write those instructions and you hand it to somebody and you make them do it absolutely how you wrote it. Guess what? That sandwich is going to suck if you didn't take a lot of time and thought process into how do you actually do this. And so that's, I would say, is probably why most people don't like processes, because it isn't fun. You know, it's a lot of that fine detail-oriented, like, you are really having to spend a lot of time on some very minute things. But if you don't do it, who knows?
Can't get to the next step. It's
like, put peanut butter on bread. Okay, just drop the jar on there. How do you do that?
I love that you remember the fifth grade so vividly. I can't remember like last week.
I'm so fortunate that I'm young.
Closer to the fifth grade than I am. Yes.
But at the same time, I do try to take some of those life lessons very seriously, even from a young age. And I say, learn things the easy way. Let somebody else do it the hard way.
Right. I love it. That's great. Totally. Well, Stu, I look forward to watching your world domination progress.
World domination of car.
Totally. It's a great model and it's a great story. So thank you for sharing with us and best of luck with your next steps.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate the opportunity to be on the podcast here, and I appreciate the words of encouragement. I'm definitely looking forward to world domination.
Yeah. And for anybody who's interested in checking out Stu's Garage, I will put the link in the show notes. Hold on. Let me look at the URL. You've got to be, are you just stusgarage.com?
Stusgarage.com or Google Stu's Garage, Stu's Self-Service Garage. You can find us on Facebook as well, Stu's Self-Service Garage.
I love it. Perfect. Okay, good. So you can find Stu if you want to learn more. Stu, thanks again.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Jenny.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.